The latest in a docuseries on underwater ecosystems will feature marine life off Long Island's South Shore and Montauk Point. Fairfield, Connecticut native Tomas Keck is the filmmaker. The focus of the series is Rhode Island, but he says a lot of wildlife utilize the currents in our region.
Rhode Island is sort of this vertex, this area where a lot of wildlife propagate. And it's this cool spot where you get a lot of animals coming from the south, from the mid-Atlantic. And you get a lot of animals that like the colder water that are coming from the north.
Keck says what's unique about the series is that these are not far off exotic places being featured. He hopes this inspires folks to appreciate the wildlife we have right here at home.
The wild sometimes is in your very own backyard, and you don't need to go far to see it. You know, grab a mask, grab a snorkel. If you're off Block Island or off of some little snorkel spots around the Northeast, you can see a lot of this stuff yourself. It isn't that far away. You just got to peek beneath the surface.
You can stream the first episode of Ocean State, Rhode Island's Wild Coast, now on PBS Passport. The next episode is available there on June 15th. You're listening to WSHU's After All Things with daily news and culture from around Long Island Sound. What's to become of the old Remington Arms factory in Bridgeport? New York bars are allowed to extend their hours during the World Cup. And speaking of, Haitian New Yorkers celebrate the team's return to the event. Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Sabrina Garone. The city of Bridgeport is close to deciding what to do with the long-abandoned Remington Arms factory. WSHU's Molly Ingram has more.
What's left of the old Remington Arms plant that can be seen from I-95 has been closed for decades. Next steps for the property are expected to be revealed at a July City Council meeting. Mayor Joe Ganim's administration will choose and present a redevelopment concept to the council. Five proposals were made and are being considered. They range from manufacturing to commercial use, with at least one of them including housing. The state has kicked in millions of dollars to help pay for the cleanup of the city's two Remington facilities. Another major demolition on the city's to-do list is the candy cane smokestack from the old coal-fired power plant. That's been delayed, and it's not clear when a decision on what comes next for the landmark will be released. Molly Ingram, WSHU News.
Good news for all you soccer fans and night owls. Bars and restaurants throughout New York State will be allowed to extend their hours during the World Cup tournament. The New York Public News Network's Beth Adams has more.
Bars and restaurants across the state may serve alcohol until 4 a.m. under legislation approved by the legislature and signed by Governor Kathy Hochul on Tuesday. The temporary extension will be allowed between June 11th and July 20th to help establishments meet increased demand during the World Cup tournament, which the U.S. is hosting for the first time since 1994. Earlier legislation is also allowing bars and restaurants to host large-scale watch parties, street festivals, and expanded outdoor patios for the duration of the tournament. I'm Beth Adams for the New York Public News Network.
Advocates for a temporary pause on nuclear power construction in New York State say they'll try again next year. Legislation placing a 30-day hold on those projects reached the Key Rules Committee in both chambers in the last days of the legislative session. Anne Rabe with the Alliance for Nuclear-Free New York says advocates plan to spend the summer and fall spreading the message that nuclear power is too expensive for consumers.
There's plenty of evidence that the state should have a legislatively led fiscal study, and it's just basically trying to protect the ratepayers. That's all we're trying to do.
Meanwhile, Governor Hochul continues to tout her plan to add 5 gigawatts of nuclear capacity, and the New York Power Authority is searching for developers for the project who could deliver the tech by 2033. Haiti's national soccer team is back in the World Cup for the first time in 52 years. Local reaction is coming up. A collapsed dam and destroyed roadway in Stony Brook will be rebuilt to their original dimensions. Local governments and a nonprofit had been at odds over responsibility for rebuilding since the collapse during a 2024 storm. Reconstruction is expected to cost between $8 and $12 million. Certain products sold in Connecticut are now required to have PFAS warning labels starting July 1st. The forever chemicals are linked to certain cancers and a variety of health issues and take a really long time to break down. You'll see labels on things like nonstick cookware, dental floss, upholstered furniture, feminine care products, and more. A Yale University administrator says a new federal policy could amount to a political litmus test to get grant money. WSHU's Davis Donovan has more.
The Trump administration wants to require grant seekers to get approval from political appointees within the administration. The criteria? Whether the research supports so-called anti-American ideas like diversity, equality, and inclusion. A Yale provost told the university's campus paper, The Daily News, that the changes would undo the peer review system on which researchers rely. Three professors also told the paper the proposal is a threat to scientific independence and could halt life-saving research. Davis Donovan, WSHU News.
Haiti's national soccer team is back in the World Cup for the first time in over 50 years, and Haitian New Yorkers are ready to celebrate and share their stories. The New York Public News Network's David Brand reports from Brooklyn.
Let me take you back to June 15, 1974 in Munich, the last time Haiti was in the World Cup. Joe DeSorcis recalls how Haiti sparred with mighty Italy and went into halftime tied.
Vividly, I remember that vividly.
Marchetti.
Then, Haiti's Emmanuel Sanon scored a stunner against Italy's legendary goalkeeper, Dino Zoff.
Nobody could score on Dino Zoff, but we did.
Haiti still went on to lose. DeSorcis was 23 then. He's now 75, but it still stings.
We lost the game because the coach made a mistake.
DeSorcis says the sport plays a big role in Haitian identity and culture.
The Haitian people love soccer. They love soccer.
And he says the fact that Haiti is finally in the World Cup again this year is a much-needed moment of pride and unity for a country that's faced poverty, political violence, and crippling natural disasters.
It is a very moving situation for the Haitian people because, you know, for what's going on in Haiti at this moment, to have the country qualify to the World Cup, that means a lot to every Haitian, including myself.
A lot of Haitian New Yorkers can relate. Haitian soccer teams doubled as social clubs and helped shape the sport's local history for decades. And as people here prepare for Haiti's first World Cup match on Saturday, a group of Brooklyn College researchers is trying to collect their memories.
You see a lot of group pictures of the clubs, like New York Veterans was a club that was founded in the 80s.
Doctoral student Jaira Placide is building an archive focused on the New York Haitian community's rich soccer history. She says her dad came to New York from Haiti in the late 1960s. The first thing he did was get a job in a New Jersey steel mill. The second, joining a soccer team with other Haitian immigrants.
Because he always had that community to go to. Yeah.
She points to a black and white team picture dated 1971. Her dad, Gerard Belliot, is crouching on a field in Riverside Park with teammates from the Haitian Stars.
That's him right here. And I recognize like maybe three people from growing up in this picture.
Gerard is 89 now. He says he held onto the items because he knew Haitian New Yorkers needed an archive like this one. He says he plans to watch the World Cup matches with friends and record a running commentary. Jaira Placide says she would put that in the archive, too.
This is how we can preserve a community's history, because soccer is an international sport. It unites people. So we build this archive as like, hey, we are together. You know, we are together. There's no need to be fighting and apart.
Placide says she hopes the World Cup inspires more Haitian New Yorkers to visit the archive and to tell their own stories.
When you come to this particular site, it is a joy, it is a celebration, and it is extremely important to have archives that, from the get-go, we know that that's the vibe that we're getting.
And that'll be the vibe on the streets of Flatbush come Saturday. Granger Levecchio is a chef who moved to the neighborhood from Haiti 30 years ago. He's 57 now and says he's ready for a party.
You're gonna see the happiness. The party, the everything. You're gonna see we celebrate everything.
Yeah. And he says, just wait until Haiti wins a match.
If we win one time, we're gonna put the banner out.
Haiti faces Scotland in their World Cup opener at 9 o'clock Saturday night. In New York City, I'm David Brand for the New York Public News Network.
You need clear, reliable reporting, stories that help you understand what's going on and why it matters. And you want music that grounds you, lifts you, or gives you a moment to breathe. Here at WSHU, you get both every day. News you trust, music you love. Listen on the radio, online, with our free app, and of course, right here on the After All Things podcast. I'm Sabrina Garone. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll speak tomorrow.